The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening. So I had something maybe a little bit different in mind for tonight, and that is I thought I would talk about a simple idea, and then what might be a complex idea, complicated idea, that's supposed to be simple, and then have you guys discuss the complicated idea. I'll tell you how it works. So the simple idea, or a very simple, I think very nice approach to mindfulness practice, meditation practice, when the mind is busy, you know, you sit down to meditate, and sometimes the mind is restless, it's agitated, or it's so easily, you know, gets caught up in the highways and byways of your mind. So much so that you sit down, you try to be with your breath, and the next thing you know, it's 5 minutes has gone by, and you've been, the last thing you were aware of was your breathing. You were not even here. And you try to come back to your breath, and the mind slips off again. It's really hard to be here. So in that kind of circumstance, a way of practicing meditation that some people find very helpful is to practice saying the word here. And just say it very peacefully, quietly, here, as a reminder that you're here. And just here I am, here. And you want to say it gently, because what you don't want to do is like a command like you would to a dog. You know, your poor mind, you know. Come here and sit. And the idea is to just say here, and then in a very allowing, spacious, relaxed way, notice what is here. What's happening to you? What's your experience right now? And if what's your experience is that you have a mind that's really restless and busy, then you would not be in conflict with that. You wouldn't try to stop that necessarily. You would take a moment to just recognize and feel that here, there's a person with a busy mind. Just as very simple, here. This is what it's like here. So you're not trying to get anywhere. You're not trying to get concentrated. You're not trying particularly to get really mindful. You're just trying to acknowledge here what's happening. And then you do it again. Here. What's happening? Here. And you kind of just, and it's a moment of kind of relaxed recognition of what is happening here and now, regardless of what it is. Everything's okay. And you have to do it again. And again. And if you keep doing it, it begins to relax the reactive mind that's kind of judging and upset and wanting things to be different, or, you know. But it also begins to relax that part of the mind that wants to wander a lot, wants to run away a lot, wants to be busy. And you'll find yourself probably slowly becoming more and more here, in this room, at this place, at this time. You're just here. And then once you're here, a little bit more than you had been, your mind's not so busy, then you can maybe start focusing on your breath and, you know, developing mindfulness concentration on the breathing. Here. I think it's very nice that the word here, H-E-R-E, is, I guess, a homonym with here, to listen, H-E-A-R. Because hearing is a somewhat receptive, passive thing we do. Active hearing is listen. Listen. Someone says, listen to that. They don't say, hear that. They guess they could do that occasionally, but you hear, and you open yourself up to hear, and it's more of kind of a receptive mode in the present moment, because you can only hear in the present moment. So I like it that it's a homonym. So the idea is to kind of, in the spirit of listening that way, in a kind of open, relaxed way, just to hear. And if you're really upset, then hear reveals upset person. And you just feel it for a moment. Just you feel it. You allow for it. You just acknowledge it in a very allowing way for as long as you can stay with it. And then you do hear again. Does that make sense? So that's a simple idea. And it helps to relax and settle down. Now for the more complex idea. complicated idea. And that is that in Buddhism, the act of perception is not an innocent act. It's not just a natural thing that you have no responsibility to. The acts of perception, when you perceive, there's no like pure perception. I just open my eyes and I see people out there and that's the way it is. Acts of perception have a very big mental component to them, and it's a mental construction that happens of what we see. So, for example, I'm pretty confident that, if you go down to some of these tribes still in the Amazon basin who have never, seen, our kind of civilization at all, and you brought them a frisbee, they wouldn't see a frisbee. The frisbeeness of the frisbee is not obvious in the object. We have a history of frisbees. We know how we throw them. We know how we catch them. We know how we play with them. We know about super frisbee, and different games. Like ultimate frisbee is called, right? And so we know all these things. And so we see a frisbee, and we see this is a frisbee. But we only see it because we construct the frisbee out of our memory and associations and everything we have with that. And so our acts of perception often come along with the acts of perception are a big part of them is that there are mental constructs that happen so automatically and so quickly that it seems to us like we're just innocent. We're just standing there. What's the big deal? It's obviously a frisbee. That's the frisbeeness is just kind of coming into your eyes, and that's what it is. So that is that way with many of the things that we perceive in the world, that it's not just an innocent seeing, but that we're involved somehow participating in the construct. The first time that I kind of noticed this in a kind of interesting way was when I was at Tassajara, the Zen monastery in Big Sur, and they have these natural hot springs there, and they had them kind of made into a nice little hot pool you can go soak. And so I would go there every day. It was a part of the schedule. You can go to soak in the hot baths. It was very nice. And then one day I went there to do my soak, and lowered into this hot bath was this very large frame. I don't know how long, maybe 4 foot long frame, 4 by 1 foot or something. But they had all these 1 gallon glass jars in it, and in there was a milk kind of culture with yogurt culture in it, and they were making yogurt. They were using this hot bath as an incubator for making yogurt, and they made very good yogurt that, we'd eat it. So I looked at that and I said, now, is this a hot bath? Is it a bath or a pool, or is this an incubator, yogurt maker? Depending how you look at it, what is it? How it's used, we might see one thing, see another thing. It's so much used as a hot bath that maybe it's hard not to break that perception. But there may be other things that we see like we have at home. We used to have, when my kids were smaller, we had something which was a stool for the kids to sit on. When the kids outgrew it, it became a stand to stand on to get to the upper shelf. Is it a stool or is it a stand? It depends how it's used. But how it's used is defined by what we choose to use it for, and so it's partly a construct that goes into the perceiving of it. There's no inherent stoolness or stand thing. So there's many, many things like that, and it's true with people as well. When we see a person, we don't just see the innate, pristine, original nature of that person. We see person through the filter of constructs and ideas. And I saw this many years ago when I was 18. I was traveling around Morocco, and it was the first time I'd been to a non-Western country as an adult. And I was going around, and I noticed that, this is long ago, and I noticed that my mind felt different than it had felt before. And I got kind of curious, but it felt kind of fresher or lighter, or somehow fresher, lighter, more open, or a little bit more rested or something. It was something. It's a little different. I thought, what's going on here? And I, as I paid attention to it, the conclusion I came was that the reason my mind was this way, in the kind of walking around these cities and towns and stuff, was that the people back in Morocco, back in those days, in the towns we were in, were still wearing their traditional clothes. The men were wearing these yalabas, these long kind of dresses. And I had no reference point for understanding it, like I did here in America. Here in America, I had all kinds of associations with what guys wore. That's a jock, that's a hippie, that's a this, that's a that, you know. And with that recognition came judgments about different people. And the act of seeing someone was not so innocent here in America because that all this, the construct, the perception came along with all these constructs. So, in Morocco, I could see people, and I didn't have any constructs, because it's just like, what, men wearing dresses? You know, I mean, I didn't have, it was fine with me, but, you know, it didn't come along with, oh, that's a Republican and Democrat, you know. Maybe they were, you know, whatever, and different parties in Morocco, but it had no meaning for me. So I could feel this freshness, this lightness in my mind. So perception is not innocent. And one of the ways, maybe, that's, you know, that's complicated is that there can be intensity connected to perception. It's not just simply that we just perceive, but we can be very interested in perceiving. We can be interested in certain things. So, you know, if I said something, I don't know what I could say, maybe I could say, you know, 1/10 of all the cars that came here today, your tires are flat. When you leave here, you're going to be pretty curious about your tire. And you're probably going to be, your perception's going to go and look at your tires, walk around your car, look at all the tires, see if you're one of those 10% who has a flat tire. And so you're going to be now focused, because I talked about this, about the tires, and depending on what you associate that with, if you're completely relaxed about flat tires, I mean, you know, big deal, you know, and you know, it's the night, it's dark, it doesn't really matter, and, you know, you'll just jack your car up, you fix it, and you go home. It's like, you know, it's nice to be out in the fresh air. You know, then you perceive it one way. But, you live over in Oakland, and you have no money with you, and no nothing, you don't even have AAA, and what are you going to do? You've never changed a tire in your life before. Then, when you go to look for the flat tire, you're going to look with a certain kind of, different kind of intensity, as if, oh, it's nice to get some fresh air and get some exercise. And so the looking, you know, you look in a particular way with certain intensity, and you look for certain things. You're kind of narrow in focus. Depending on how important it is, you get more focused. Some of you will go out, and all you'll see when you go out is tires. And if I hadn't talked about this, you wouldn't have occurred to you look at tires. It's like, you know, don't think of white elephants, you know, pink elephants, whatever. And suddenly you weren't thinking about it, but now, you know, why'd you tell me how to think about it? So now, so there can be intensity and focus and preferences around the act of perception as well. And some of that can be deeply embedded in our psychology. So that some people, when they're going around through the world, there's always a veneer or layer of a certain kind of activity around perception that's kind of a common denominator of all acts of perception. So, for example, some people, maybe for good reason, go around being afraid. The world is a dangerous place. And so when they go around and look where they're going, they're always kind of scanning the situation, say, is it safe here? Is it okay now? Am I going to be okay now? Do I work here? Do I fit here with these people? Are these, you know, am I accepted? And it could be very subtle, but it's kind of built into the act of perception. And my person might not even be aware of it because of how ingrained or how subtle it might be. Or it could be that it's desire. Some people have very strong motivation to have and to get. And so they're always looking around a little bit, like, what can I get out of the situation? What's in it for me? And that's kind of, the act of perception happens through that, along with that kind of motivation. Some people, the act of perception is completely entangled with self-referential thinking. And so we don't just kind of go out there and look at something in the world, but we look and we look through the filter of what's in this for me? Or how does this relate to me? And that's You know, it's such a deep part of the act of perception itself. So the complicated idea I wanted to say here is that perception itself is not innocent. It's a lot of things go into perception. Buddhism doesn't posit pure perception. It emphasizes how perception can have intensity to it. There can be tension, attachment, clinging. Perception can be tense. And one of the instructions in Buddhism, Buddhist practice, classic instructions, is when you sit down to at least meditate, to also relax your perception, soften your perception, make it calm. And even in meditation, when your eyes are closed, some people, you're still perceiving, maybe not with your eyes, but you're still perceiving. And there can be, because we never look at perception so carefully, we're not trained then to notice all the associated aspects that go together with that act of perception. We might not notice that the act of perception is overly eager, or we're kind of trying to get something from the experience, or trying to do something, or a little bit afraid, or we're hesitant. So we're sitting here being with the breathing, and the breathing is relaxed enough, perhaps, but there's an intensity in trying to see or perceive or sense or experience the breathing. We're kind of leaning into it, grabbing onto it. And some people start getting little headaches if they try too much this way. This idea that perception is not innocent is kind of conveyed to the ancient Buddhist kind of more, I don't know what. Again, not just ancient Buddhist, but it's an ancient Indian idea of how the perception of seeing occurs. You know, they didn't have the theory of light that we have. And so how do you see? So they believe that there was some kind of force in our eyes, something in our eyes, that would go out of our eyes and grab on to what was out there and bring it back so we could see it. And go out and grab. And in some ways, for some people, that's often how they see. They're a little bit, I don't know if their eyes are popping out, but there's such intensity in their eyes, almost as if their eyes are trying to hold on and grab or get something. So relax. Relax the acts of perception. That's part of the instruction. So is that a complicated idea? Complicated enough? So this is what I had in mind. I should like to suggest that you go into groups of four or five people and you discuss, to the degree to which you're comfortable, how it might be that your acts of perceptions are not so innocent. It doesn't mean that you have to kind of, so again, this is not, you know, full confession, but whatever you're comfortable talking about, you know, can you think a little bit, stretch yourself a little bit, and think, when you kind of go around the world and perceive the world, other people, things, what are some of the associated activities of the mind that comes along with that for you, that's almost automatic? Maybe not just once in a while, but maybe it's a common thing. What do you think might go into your act of perception? And if you're mystified by what I just talked about, all this stuff, but perception, then talk about that. And perhaps the group, the four or five of you, maybe can explore this idea a little more, maybe even say it better or simpler than I have. Is that okay? Now, it's very common, we don't do this very often, have people break into groups to talk. Some people come here to be quiet and not to do that, so you can leave if you'd like, or just be quiet, sit in your chair and be quiet and not participate, and just, yeah, that's fine. But some people aren't comfortable about talking to people, people after all. But almost everyone really values this afterwards. And one of the things that's really nice is that there's not that many opportunities to meet other people this way in a meditation group where we sit and meditate and then listen to the teacher and go home. So it's actually kind of nice to kind of make a little bit of, you know, hear other people and get to make some contact. So it's a nice thing to do. So we'll do that for about, you know, 10 or so minutes. And then we'll regather and then we'll kind of debrief about what your conversations were like. Okay? So when you find a group around you, four or five people, and have that conversation. So I'm curious if some of you learned something new in that conversation and about yourself or about the perception or something. And in particular, if might you have learned something about a possibility of relaxing perception or relaxing around perception, becoming calmer about perception. So I don't know if anybody would like to mention what you might have learned or what came out. And it might be interesting to hear a variety of things. I'm sure there's many points of view.
Hello there. We were talking about our perceptions and the truth, and in relationships with people, how, you know, it's amazing how we can all be in a similar place, experiencing the same thing, but yet we all have a completely different experience and can all recount a completely different experience. And so we were talking about the truth and what is really the truth, but our own perceptions.
What's the difference between the truth and what our perception is? But often I think we have different perceptions, different things that are important. You know, I have this 8-year-old son now who he's into being an engineer. So I know that if he came into this room here, he'd be looking around, and what he's looking for is engineers. And then I have a 13-year-old son, and now almost 14, and I guarantee you, if he's coming into this room, he's going to look for something very different than who's the engineer. And so, you know, people look at different things, and I don't. Maybe this is silly to say, but a woman told me recently. I have no idea if it's true or anything, but maybe just the idea and principle, you know, applied elsewhere maybe is relevant. But she was telling me about women and shoes, and I said something. Well, I never noticed women's shoes. And she said, yeah, mostly women wear shoes for each other. So, I mean, I don't know. So I don't know if that was politically incorrect or what, but dangerous territory. You know, I go into a room, I'm not looking at the shoes. So we perceive different things depending on our interests. So someone else.
You know, the comment about women in shoes, at first, I have like 5 or 6 pairs of shoes, and they're all very utility alike. One's for work, one's for leisure, one's for the rain. It's all. And then I'm like, there's no connection as far as I'm concerned. But then I realize that I do notice women, the different shoes that women wear, especially if it's like heels. Just on a subconscious level, so it's like
something about you has some concern about that or some interest there, and so I didn't even think about. Yeah. So there's a variety of things that are interesting about something like that. Is, you know, not only the fact that there might be some little bit of concern or focus on that, but also how strong is the concern? How much energy goes into it? Is it just kind of like you know whatever? Or is it, you know, there's some kind of narrowing of attention, and does it come with ideas and judgments involved as well? Anyway, thank you.
Just one addition, like when I see a pair of shoes, that's like, oh, that's a cute pair. But then, like, I noticed one lady this morning where she could hardly walk in her shoes. I'm like, oh.
It hurts to watch. Thank you. Someone else?
Hey. You mentioned engineers. I always think, since I'm an engineer or educated as one, they're always looking for what's going to go wrong. So, you know, or how's it going to work, and will it fail? And you go through your life. What's going to work, and what's going to fail? And then you go home, and you see a wife, and you... and you let, you know, and so she does something, you know, that, you know, you think, oh, you know, that's not quite the way to do it. your critical mind is already there, and you just spent 8 hours looking at a machine that's failed for maybe, you know, 3 or 4 months, and you're trying to figure out why this thing doesn't work. And So
there's an example. You know, there's a perception, that the way of perceiving, and that can be relaxed.
Yeah.
So this is where the wife says, I think you should come meditate.
Actually, she does that. Now she's going to say something.
This is interesting because I did mention my husband in our group discussion, didn't I? We were talking about how judgment is, whether it's about back pain or about what somebody is experiencing when you look at them, or about what they might be thinking about you. And sometimes I'll perceive that he's going to be critical, but he isn't. Not always. So it's always different. And we came to a really nice point at the end, I thought, you know, a lot of just kind of unity around how, well, if we can just remember to be open, and that, you know, open and new, and what were some of the other words along those lines, where, and that does feel like kind of a relaxing of a concept and letting other things come in.
Nice. Thank you. Maybe one more?
I didn't think of it when we were talking, but I think for me, when some kind of a health issue comes up, how I perceive it makes a big difference in how I react to it. If I see it as, this is like the last straw on top of the, you know, 9 other ailments I have, then I have a very strong reaction of being demoralized for a couple of days. But if I can perceive it as, I'm 55 years old, most of the, my peer group has this kind of, this sort of, ailment or pain or whatever, then I can handle it
much more easily. Yeah. There's a common phenomena, I think, sometimes recognize when someone has an injury or something hurts in their body, the pain goes away or gets a lot less when the doctor gives you a diagnosis. It's okay. it's the unknown, the fear that comes into it that has a big impact on how we perceive pain even. So there's a lot of room to relax perception. Perception in Buddhism, the word for perception is sannya, and occasionally you see translators translate it as conceptualization, because perception and conceptualization come very closely together, almost as, they're overlap quite a bit. And so as soon as you have concepts, you have all these other, associated ways of being with it, some of them which can be tense and agitate a lot of energy around it. So one of the things that happens in meditation practice is that we relax the conceptual mind, which translates or includes also the relaxing of the perceptual activity of the mind. So it's very interesting when perception gets more and more calmer and calmer. And in deep meditation, in fact, it gets so calm that much of the ordinary ways of perceiving things takes a vacation. So, for example, you would not really hear anything anymore. You might not feel your body in meditation. I've opened my body to make open my eyes to make sure I still had body, and it hadn't gone anywhere. But the inner tactile kind of senses that you used to perceive the body from the inside just was not, had calmed down, and it was so calm, it just, there was nothing being perceived. And it kind of, you get then to kind of the outer reaches of how deeply relaxed a person can be. So I offer this tonight with the idea that it's an idea that maybe isn't often thought about or realized. We take perception as for granted as an innocent act, and by turning the attention, looking at perception, and considering it this way, it might be a certain avenue or doorway into learning where you can relax, soften, open up, be fresher, and perhaps you can also have the kind of fresher, more relaxed mind that I had in Morocco, which was nice for me, but it's also nice for those people, any people, that you are judging, and seeing through a certain filter. It just relax that filter and just kind of see in a fresh, open way is really good. So thank you for participating in this. And it was quite nice for me to watch all the animated conversation. It looked like it was nice for you. So I hope that, you know, it was nice to meet some other people here. And so thank you very much.